You're listening to Love and Revolution Radio, covering the heart of change and changes of the heart, featuring stories of ordinary, extraordinary people who are waging struggles for love and revolution.
This week on Love and Revolution Radio, we speak with Margaret Aldrich, the author of the Little Free Library book about the quiet revolution of literacy, sharing, and community that's popping up in more than 40,000 front yards around the world.
As I've talked with Little Free Library stewards really all over the world, I've talked to folks in India and Brazil and Italy and really everywhere. The universal things that I'm hearing from people is really that Little Free Libraries, one, they help them celebrate their love of reading, but two, they help them build a sense of community.
Hello, this is Sherry Mitchell for Love and Revolution Radio. Aguano, Agolazikawolpa, and Willigaskit. Welcome and greetings to you in my native language. It's a beautiful day here in the Dawn Land in Penobscot Territory, and I'm coming to you from along the shores of the beautiful Penobscot River in central Maine. And of course, as always, I'm joined by my illuminous co-host, Miss Rivera Sun. Hello, Rivera.
Well, hello, Sherry. The season has turned out here in New Mexico. We all hope. We hope we're not going to get any more snow, but it is pretty glorious and warm, and the irises are blooming, and everyone's starting to plant. So it's the turning of the season here. We're going to have a very intriguing conversation with Margaret Aldrich, who is the author of the Little Free Library book and a writer and editor based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're going to talk about the Little Free Library phenomenon, how it started, how it exploded, and where it is today. I've been intrigued myself to ask all these questions, and now is my golden opportunity. So thank you, Margaret, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Margaret, it's such a treat to be able to talk to you. I have seen Little Free Libraries all over the country in my travels, and we're actually putting one in our community at the Penobscot Nation right now. And I'm interested to hear, how did the Little Free Library project come into being?
Well, I'd love to hear, first of all, that you're putting up a Little Free Library. That's always exciting for me to know that there's another Little Free Library coming into the world. Little Free Libraries, it's an interesting thing. It was a good idea that has just kind of exploded. The first one was built in Hudson, Wisconsin in 2009 by a man named Todd Bowl. And Todd had some extra time on his hands. His mother had passed away, and he was working, you know, he does woodworking, and he was kind of tinkering in his garage and thinking about his mom. And he ended up building a replica of a one-room schoolhouse out of some wood that he had. And then he thought, oh, my mother was, she loved books. She was a tutor and a teacher. So he put some of her books in there, and he placed this box of books in his front yard. And then he saw how his neighbors reacted to it and how they embraced it. Some of them literally, some people literally hugged this, what became a Little Free Library. So after he built this first one and saw the reaction, he thought, you know, I think there's really something here. And he started to work on how to spread the Little Free Library movement.
When was this, Margaret? And in the ensuing years since this began, how did it start cropping up all over the place?
You know, I think at first it was really word of mouth. This has been a grassroots movement since the beginning, and it really still is. People see a little free library, they instantly connect with it and love the idea of sharing books with neighbors. And so at first it was really word of mouth, and then there was an NPR interview that helped spread it to other parts of the country. And then it began to trickle internationally as well. I talked to one man in South Korea for the book, and he said that for him it was as simple as Googling the word library. He just, for some reason, Googled the word library, and in the results was the Little Free Library website. He started to look into it. He looked on the world map online and saw that there was no Little Free Library in South Korea. So he thought, I guess I should build the first one. And so that's how the first one ended up in South Korea. So it's been this combination of good old-fashioned word of mouth and with a little bit of technology and social media thrown in that's helped spread the movement.
Margaret, I have to tell you this story. I was in Wyoming on vacation last year with some friends of mine, and we were in Crazy Woman Canyon, and we decided to take a trip for an overnight up into the mountains to stay in this little cabin in the mountains. So we went up into the mountains, and we're getting further and further up into the mountains, and there's very few homes or cabins up in this region, and we're driving down this road in the middle of nowhere, and there along the side of the road is a little free library. And so one of the things that I realized just now is that we haven't really told the listeners what a little free library is. There may be some people out there that don't know what a little free library is. Can you actually describe for our listeners what it is?
Absolutely. And that's a really good point. Sometimes I get in this mode where I just assume, oh, of course, people have seen a little free library, but there's still a lot of ground to cover. A little free library is a box of books, literally a box of books that's placed in a front yard most often. Sometimes it's placed in a park or in a hospital waiting room or a coffee shop. And people use this box to share books, to trade books, to take books. It's really a free community book exchange. And a little free library, while often it looks like kind of a small house or a large birdhouse, they can really be any shape that you'd like them to be. There's really no rules to what a little free library looks like. So I've seen little free libraries that look like robots or rocket ships or roosters. I mean, it's really kind of amazing to see the creativity that goes behind the design of a little free library.
And who puts the books inside the little free libraries, and what kind of books show up in there?
Well, each little free library has a caretaker or an owner, and we call that person the steward. So the little free library steward is the first one to place books into the little free library and to share with their neighborhood. And after that, ideally, and most often, it really turns into this symbiotic relationship with the community, because people are dropping off books to share, they're taking one that they like, they're bringing another two back, they're taking three more that they like. So it becomes this kind of continuous cycle of books being traded. So ideally, the steward themselves won't have to really do much to keep it stocked. You know, often I find that kids' books in my little free library zoom away. They fly off instantly. So I often have to replenish the kids' books. But I think that's a really great thing, because that means that the kids in my neighborhood are taking books and reading them. But I love that in a little free library, the books start to reflect the neighborhood. Maybe you'll get, oh gosh, travel guides to Jamaica from someone who's just gone on a trip, or a cancer survivor's cookbook, maybe from someone who's going through that journey. Or you might find mysteries donated from someone down the street, or kids books from someone whose children have now outgrown them. So I love that idea that what shows up in a little free library is a reflection of the people who live nearby.
I was just going to go into that in my next question, so I'm glad that you brought that up. That not only do little free libraries promote literacy and the love of reading, but they also build a sense of community as people start sharing experiences, skills, creativity, wisdom across generations with one another in the community. So what has been your experience with this in watching communities come together and grow around the creation and exchanges that are brought by a little free library?
Well, that's a really good question. And that's something that we see every day, is how these little free libraries make an impact in their communities. At first, my husband and I put one up in our front yard. We live on a fairly busy street because we're right around the corner from a bakery and a wine bar, so we get lots of good foot traffic on our block. But as we were putting out the little free library, you know, putting it on its post, I thought, is this really going to make a difference? You know, are people really going to use this? Even though I was already a big fan of the Little Free Library project. And literally within 5 minutes, we had people crossing the street to come over and say hi and ask about the library and engage with us. We had neighbors come over who we had almost never spoken to before, just because we had no really reason to cross paths. So on a personal level, I saw immediately that a little free library was kind of this social icebreaker on our block, and it allowed us to bump into people more often, to get into conversations, first about books, but then about other things too. And I've heard that from stewards all over the country, that they've been surprised at the effect their little free library has had. And people do a lot of things with their little free libraries to help encourage that community building. Some people host story time at their little free library and invite kids over. Some people have a block party kind of around their little free library. And other people have used little free libraries to maybe honor a loved one who's died, or used one as a gift for someone who's had a life event. I even talked to a man who proposed to his wife by putting an engagement ring in her little free library. So there are lots of great stories of personal connections. And on a larger scale, they also can connect people who have little free libraries around the world. People in the United States who have little free libraries, through the Little Free Library nonprofit organization, they become connected with little free library stewards in Italy and Australia and Afghanistan. So it's interesting to see how that network connects people as well. And there's been a lot of great community building projects that are more structured too around little free libraries. And one of my favorites is the Little Free Library nonprofit has a program called Kids, Community, and Cops. And through that, police officers in cities like Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Detroit, they put little free libraries in their precincts, and then they invite the communities to use that little free library. They invite kids in for story time, and they use that as a way to see each other as real people, so that someone who comes into the police precinct for something positive might be more likely to see the police officer as a real person. And that police officer can engage with his or her community in a way that they might not otherwise.
That's a wonderful story, Margaret. One of the great things that I heard while I was listening to you is this image that came to mind of what happens when people put out bird feeders is that they stand in their windows and they watch all these beautiful birds show up. And in many ways, your story of putting out your little free library was a very direct parallel of you put out the feeder and all these little creatures showed up and started connecting with you. And it's a wonderful image. I wanted to relate one of my stories with a little free library, which is that I travel around the country teaching workshops in nonviolent movements for change. And when I do that, I often stay with a host in the community. And one time, up in Leavenworth, Washington, I was staying with a host family. And it was a very strong mark of pride to take me on a walk around the neighborhood to take me to their little free library and to show me my novel in their little free library. It was just one of the most delightful things, is to be taken on an adventure like that by kids who are part of this revolutionary movement that is unraveling and reweaving our society from something rather dysfunctional to something quite rooted in the kind of sharing and community interaction that is woven into the evolution of the human species. I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned the police officers, but I read on the Little Free Library website that businesses also get involved in putting out little free libraries. And are they doing that in residential neighborhoods or in commercial neighborhoods or both? And what is the effect of that?
They have done it in both. And, you know, I think that we're all looking for ways to contribute, and we're all looking for ways to connect. And so even businesses and corporations, when they're looking for ways to give back to their communities, Little Free Libraries can be a great way to do that. Here where I'm based in Minneapolis, there are some businesses who have helped build Little Free Libraries to donate to a part of the city that is more of a book desert, that doesn't have as ready access to books, not as many libraries or not as many bookstores. And so they're helping to solve that by putting up more Little Free Libraries. And again, it's just a good way to contribute. And something that I love about it is that it's totally doable. It's not something that there's a lot of red tape or that it's really difficult or that it costs a lot of money, but it's something that any individual can achieve. Or when a business does it, they can often build 20, 30, or 40 Little Free Libraries and contribute those to the community.
In many parts of the country right now, we're seeing people who are actually fighting for their community libraries to remain open. There has been this movement to shut them down because so much is accessible to people online. And I think that one of the things that's really important in this discussion is to recognize the role of libraries in our sense of community and the role of building strong community in the practice of avoiding distance and division that often leads to violence. And so these subtle little things that we don't often think about as being associated with nonviolence or community building are things such as this Free Tiny Library Project, but also associated with our community libraries and what that offers to the community in regard to maintaining those vital connections. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your experiences in different communities around maybe some of the things that people come together around connected to their Little Free Libraries that maybe were a surprise to you?
Sure. Well, and I love, first of all, that you bring up public libraries because they are so vital to communities. And that's, Little Free Library always loves to work with public libraries and promote them and sing their praises because we would all be lost without our public libraries. For the book, I talked with a librarian named Nancy Pearl, and she loves Little Free Libraries so much. She lives in Seattle that she takes her daily walk. I think she does a 7-mile daily walk, and she visits as many Little Free Libraries as she can. And she said one of the reasons she loves Little Free Libraries is that they just help create that culture of reading, the same way that public libraries and bookstores and book clubs, anything to help kind of bolster that culture of reading can help us all. But to talk about a project that was kind of surprising in the way that it generated community, there was one project I love. Two women named Maya Stein and Amy Tingle, this was 2 summers ago, they decided to ride a tandem bicycle from Wisconsin to Colorado, and they were going to build Little Free Libraries along the way. They are artists and writing teachers, and they're based in New Jersey. They're a really fantastic couple. And so Amy and Maya, they loaded up their trailer. They had a friend drive a van along with them. And they went from small town to small town. And when they got to the small town, they would build a little free library to donate to that community. They would also engage with the community by writing poetry together. So they brought their typewriters, and they would each sit with their typewriters and invite the community to give them a word or two, and they would write a short poem and then give it to the individual. And I thought that was one of the most creative projects I've heard, is this kind of mobile little free library poetry caravan going across the Midwest from small town to small town. So that's been a little bit more of an elaborate way that two women have helped build community through little free libraries. But I also love small projects just done by the individual. There was one steward who, he puts a sketchbook in his little free library, and he invites the neighborhood to draw and doodle, paint something, take it home, bring it back, and kind of build this ever-changing community artwork through the sketchbook in his little free library. And a lot of stewards also, this time of year, they use their little free libraries to exchange seeds for the garden. So in addition to finding books, when you open a little free library door, you might find seeds for zucchini plants. So people have done some really inventive things with their little free libraries to strengthen those ties with their neighbors.
That is such a great point about the seed libraries, and I have certainly seen that. And the seed libraries are actually this amazing parallel to the little free libraries, in that here in Taos, the seed library is at all the grocery stores. We have them at the thrift stores. And it really brings me to this question of, what is the little free XYZ that could be happening in our neighborhoods? And you mentioned zucchini, which is a great example, but when my partner and I farmed 1 acre nearby to where we lived, we had so much extra produce that we would put out a box by the side of the road and let people take produce home. And it just is this another variation of what's possible. You know, when I was in college, all the dormitories had free boxes in their common rooms, and we would go free box hopping, not shopping, but hopping. And we would go and pick up, you know, a sweater or a jersey, and we would put in things that we had outgrown or we were not keeping from that semester to the next. And this is all part of this sharing economy that's evolving and really filling this major gap that's emerging in our society as the wealth becomes so concentrated and fewer of us have enough resources in the monetary arena to supply all of our needs, that we're really kind of turning the clock backwards in a very newfangled, old-fashioned way of supplying the needs of the community through sharing and giving. What are some of the other variations that you might have heard of in the course of researching for your book, The Little Free Library book, or in your own personal experience?
Well, I love how you make that connection to the sharing economy, because that's really what's happening here. There's something that feels so good about finding a book in a little free library, that it just feels better and different than maybe clicking on a website to order a book. I love the serendipity of it, of opening a door and maybe finding just the right thing that you needed at exactly that time. In addition to people having books in their library, there are other things. You know, a little free library is about more than books. As I mentioned, the seed exchanges are really popular this time of year as we're all planting our gardens and having way too many watermelon seeds or whatever else that we've planted in our backyards. So sharing those with neighbors is a great thing to do. I often see, every once in a while, I'll get records or CDs or other kinds of music in my little free library. Sometimes people plant a little flower garden or herb garden alongside their little free library with a sign that says, please take some, you know, and they invite neighbors to come and clip some flowers or some basil or some cilantro to take home. So I think that there are lots of different ways like that, that people are just wanting to share part of themselves in whatever form that takes.
And I think that's really a vital aspect of belonging when we think about the sense of place, that we often need this sense of belonging. It's one of the fundamental aspects of our well-being. And people don't always have the opportunity to share something of themselves with the larger community. And the this concept of being able to use this almost as a stage to share aspects of yourselves that people may not be aware of, interests that you have, skills, hobbies, those types of things, actually opens up a doorway for greater interaction within the community. And I think that when we start thinking about this whole idea of community building that's associated with the little free libraries, the ways that we define community have to do with sharing common interests and perspectives and coming together in some type of joint action, some type of shared community identity, and developing social ties and relationships and this ongoing sense of connectedness, and also being able to appreciate and to recognize the diversity that exists within the community, the social complexity that exists, in which, you know, you have a multiplicity of communities that kind of coexist together in one place, forming a larger community. And so it's really exciting to think about all of those aspects of how that comes together. Now, from your personal experience and having been able to connect with people that are engaged in this process from all over the place, what would you say is, in your mind or in your experience, the greatest benefit of having a little free library in your community?
Well, I think that as I've talked with little free library stewards really all over the world, there have been a couple of universal things. And again, I've talked to folks in India and Brazil and Italy and really everywhere, Japan, from Iowa to New York City to Los Angeles. So the universal things that I'm hearing from people is really that little free libraries, one, they help them celebrate their love of reading, but two, they help them build a sense of community. And that's really the thing that I think even people who didn't expect that have been surprised about, is that sense of belonging, sense of community, and sense of connection that have come through little free libraries. And one thing I love that people often do is they'll put kind of a guest book in their little free library, you know, just a little notebook with a pen or a pencil for people to leave a note. And that's been another way, a surprising way, that people have felt a lot of connection. Sometimes people will just leave a quick thank you. Sometimes a kid will draw a little picture for them. But they also have gotten lots of really meaningful notes, handwritten notes. One that I'm thinking of in particular, a woman in New Orleans got a note in her little free library that said, paraphrasing, "Thank you for the book box. I'm 41 and I just learned to read and I don't really know where the library is. I just moved here from Maine. So thank you from a neighbor." And I thought, how poignant and how special and how wonderful that this person stumbled upon this little free library, someone who hadn't known how to read before and had achieved that and now was excited about finding this kind of magical box of books. And other people have received notes from young readers who have said, "Thank you for the little free library. I thought books were boring. You made it fun." So there's been story after story of that kind of immediate interaction that's happened. But I also love that little free libraries let you be connected, whether you are an extrovert who loves to be out there chatting with people on the sidewalk, or whether you're an introvert and you want to do something to be connected, but maybe it's not your thing to be boisterous and laughing and talking with your neighbors. So it's been a really inclusive movement where everybody's invited, everybody's welcome, no matter what your personality is like, no matter what your ethnic background is, your socioeconomic background, your age, your gender. It's really for everybody.
And we'll be back after a quick break for a station ID, some featured music, and your weekly dose of nonviolence. Your love is special Nonviolence Minute for you this week, sent to us from Love and Revolution Radio listener Maudie Raber, who prepared this piece about A.J. Musty for us. If you have a nonviolent history story you'd like to share, you can contact us with it through the Love and Revolution Radio page on my website, www.riverasun.com. On today's Nonviolence Minute, we raise up the name and memory of A.J. Musty, one of the prominent American nonviolent revolutionaries in the 20th century. A.J. Musty was born in Holland in 1885 and grew up in working-class Grand Rapids, Michigan. His parents never learned to read and write, and his father worked in a furniture factory until he was in his 80s. Recognized early on for his spiritual aptitude and intellectual brilliance, Musty became a minister, first in the Dutch Reformed Church and later as a Presbyterian. After losing his pulpit for pacifism during World War I, Musty moved into the labor movement, then entering a vibrant and energetic period. After leading a strike of textile workers in Lawrence, Massachusetts in 1919, Musty spent the next two decades as a union leader, educator, theorist, political figure, and revolutionary. Even in this early period, Musty focused on bringing together disparate elements of the movement into a single coalition, not to convert anyone, but to bring all the energies together in pursuit of a unified goal. It was his rare combination of patience, purpose, and personality that allowed him to accomplish this. In the secular atmosphere of the American left in the 1920s and 30s, it was a rare gift. After a religious experience in France in 1936, Musty reconverted to Christian pacifism, and he spent the next 40 years of his life as a leader of the nonviolent left, particularly as the chair of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. If we think about the world events that occurred during this phase of Musty's career, World War II, the development and use of the nuclear bomb, the Cold War, and the atmosphere of paranoia and political repression, the anti-nuclear movement of the 1950s and early 60s, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, we can see the challenges faced by the movement that Musty led, as well as its impact on each of these issues and movements. Musty argued early on that pacifism must move beyond its obsession with conciliation and toward a more muscular and activist posture. Musty is credited with introducing the ideas of Gandhian nonviolence into the American peace movement. Martin Luther King told Musty's biographer, "The current emphasis on nonviolent direct action in the race relations field is due more to A.J. than to anyone else in the country." The Committee on Racial Equality, or CORE, which became a key element of the Civil Rights Coalition, was originally an FOR program, and many of the leaders of the civil rights and anti-war left, including Bayard Rustin, James Farmer, David Dellinger, and David McReynolds, began their careers as Musty disciples. In the last years of his life, Musty turned his full attention and efforts to opposition to the Vietnam War. Here his skills as a mediator and a unifying figure were well and often used. He played a key role in developing massive coalition demonstrations, including the spring mobilization to end the war in Vietnam, which brought together a broad coalition and huge actions under nonviolent discipline. He played a role in convincing Dr. King to oppose the war and visited Vietnam twice in the last year of his life. These are the reasons that he earned the sobriquet, the American Gandhi. Musty died in 1967, and it can be said in some ways that the peace movement and the left have never had another leader like him. Know your nonviolent history. It might change your life. Our featured music this week is Water Into Water by Maria Stark, featuring Daniel Berkman. You can find this and more great music by Maria at www.mariastarkmusic.com. That's N-A-R-Y-A. And now, let's return to our program. One of the stories that I've heard about Little Free Libraries comes from my work with Campaign Nonviolence, which is a nationwide group that organizes a week of actions every year to promote a culture of peace and active nonviolence.
A little girl in Decatur, Georgia, with the help of her parents, wrote a tiny little book about peace and made 6 or 7 copies. And then they walked around to all their little free libraries in their neighborhood and put a copy in each library. And they shared this with the entire nationwide network as an act of peace. And I thought that was such a beautiful example of how this kind of community project of the Little Free Library intersects with the sharing of skills and knowledge about peace, about nonviolent action. A lot of people put books that would fall into the category of reskilling or retooling into their libraries, so that we're actually sharing the knowledge we need to recreate our systems and create a vibrant, healthy, sustainable communities everywhere we live. Can you speak a little bit about the ways that people use the little free libraries specifically to spread messages or to share skills and knowledge like that?
Well, I think that sustainability is one of Little Free Library's missions. From using recycled materials to build the actual Little Free Library box to, as you said, really sharing our wisdom from generation to generation, too. A great project has been helping elderly people stay connected with the community by having a Little Free Library. So we've partnered with a few different groups to help bring Little Free Libraries to elderly folks who might want to have them in their front yard. And that gives them a whole new way to connect with their neighborhood again. Maybe they're not very mobile, maybe they're homebound, but they can still have a conversation in their front yard, kind of become a star in their community because they're the person with the Little Free Library. And that's a way for some oral passing of wisdom to happen. But also, plenty of us put in books that we've loved and we want to share with the community that might also further that desire too.
So one of the other things that I think is exciting is, as you've talked about, that it keeps people like the elderly connected to their community, but it's also doubling the library footprint in some areas so that people who don't often have access to these types of things have access to books and to connection to community that they may not have in some rural areas. Margaret, you had mentioned earlier in the program this project called Kids, Community, and Cops. And we never really got into that in any depth. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that and what the program is and how it's benefiting the community.
Kids, Community, and Cops is a fantastic program that's being spearheaded by the Little Free Library nonprofit organization. And with Kids, Community, and Cops, police stations like ones in Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Detroit, New Orleans, Cleveland, police officers there are placing Little Free Libraries within their precinct, and they're inviting the community to come in and use it and get to know the police officers. Some police officers host story time for kids. They wear gigantic Cat in the Hat hats to help make them look not quite so intimidating. And they're doing this, they really want to start building better connections with the public. They want the public to get to know them, and they want to get to know the people that they serve in their communities. And really, like, a police station can be a scary place. It's not a good thing if you're going to the police station in most cases. And so they're trying to, through having a Little Free Library, they're trying to give people a positive experience when they come into the police station and really get to know them, they hope, as peace officers, as stewards of the community, instead of people to be afraid of. They've been having a lot of success. I've talked with the police chief of the LAPD, who said the response has been really overwhelming, especially around their story time for kids. So the kids will come in, they'll hang out, they'll read a book together, they'll ask questions, they'll have conversation. And then when they see each other out in the world in Los Angeles, they already have a connection. They can say hi to each other, they can ask how they're doing, and it's just starting to build some positivity. And I'm not saying that a little free library is going to solve all the problems in that realm, but it's helping make those first steps towards a more positive relationship.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I hope that the approach is really being noted by police departments across the nation, because we do have such a problem in how our police departments nationwide have chosen and trained to approach their communities. And I would really hate to see this be just an example of cop washing, like the cop version of greenwashing or whitewashing something. You know, I hope that this is a seed of something much bigger that grows and doesn't just become a publicity stunt. I always have to speak my inner little cynical voice on these subjects, as well as my enduring optimist voice. And we did speak with the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building in Gainesville, Florida, that does a lot of work very similar to this about police youth dialogues and training programs for both the cops and the kids for reframing their relationship that has had a lot of success. So I honor the seed that is in this program of transforming relationships. And my hope and my wish for the program is that it opens the eyes of police departments nationwide to how they could be really serving their community differently.
Well, it is important. It really is important. And this past Saturday in Minneapolis, we had the very first Little Free Library Festival. Minneapolis is very close to Hudson, Wisconsin, where the first Little Free Library was built and where Little Free Library headquarters is. So Minneapolis was a great place to hold the first Little Free Library Festival. But we invited lots of different community groups and civic organizations to come. And one of those was the Minneapolis Police Department. And it was great to see the officers interacting with the community and the public who came to the festival. And they helped us build 104 Little Free Libraries at the festival. And those will be placed in communities where they can make the biggest impact. So I love to see those small steps toward greater positivity.
There is a sociologist named David Breen who said that community is something we do together. It's not just a container. And I love that quote because it makes me think that you have this container for books, but it's not just the container that's important. It's about doing something together. You're talking about people in the community coming together and building these little free libraries together that are going to be disseminated throughout the area. And it's about that togetherness. It's about that coming together. It's about looking each other in the eye, having conversations with each other, getting to know things about each other that are not even necessarily connected to the activity we're engaged in together. It's about humanizing ourselves to one another and developing these relationships. And I think that, you know, when we get down to it, that's really what we're all about here on Love and Revolution Radio. It's about giving our listeners and ourselves and our guests the opportunity to have conversations with one another in order to understand each other better and to share ideas about how we can improve our quality of life in relation to the larger context of creation. And so when we think about the context of this and how it seems like such a small thing, but like everything else, the ripples go out so far and they have such a great impact. Regardless of whether or not it's police washing or not, I think that a police officer who spent his time reading books to a small child that he looked in the eye, that he got to know, is going to be far less likely to shoot that child if he encounters him on the street. That when we form those human relationships with one another, regardless of our intention, something happens to us that influences the way that we engage one another. And so I'm hopeful that this project and so many others like it are going to be able to allow these new conversations to start taking place. They're going to allow us to come together in ways that we hadn't thought of, that aren't necessarily within the context of the conflicts that we have, but that give us this opportunity to engage one another in really human ways that allow us to see each other more clearly and more humanely, certainly, and that it begins to restore our sense of community, because division is one of the tools of war. And so I'm really excited by all of the work that's being done by the Little Free Library Project and by you, Margaret. So to have the vision to think about bringing this together, to create this collective around something that seems so individualized in some ways in regard to small rural communities and so detached, to build this, you've built a movement around something so simple. Do you ever think about what you've done and what you're involved in as being part of a movement?
You know, we have started to think of it that way because it's grown so quickly and through such good work of the stewards who have Little Free Libraries. It's been amazing to see. We now have nearly 40,000 Little Free Libraries around the world. They're in all 50 states, and they're in at least 70 different countries. And so when we started to see that, how far it had spread, it really did start to feel like a movement. And the fact that Little Free Library stewards are connected to each other. One story that I love, and I just got to see this steward over the past weekend, there's a boy named Evan who is 11 years old. And Evan has kind of a rare form of cancer, and so he's had to have more chemo treatments than a child his age should have had to have. And Evan decided that he would like to build a little free library to have in front of his house. And he loves lighthouses, so he gave it a lighthouse theme, and he called it Evan's Port Number 1. And he did that because it fit the library theme, and also because he had a medical port himself from his cancer treatments. And Evan has become kind of a super steward for Little Free Libraries. He has made friends with other Little Free Library stewards all over the country and around the world. And that has given him so much, because he feels like even if he has to miss school and he has to be home for recovery, he still has this extended family around the world because he has a Little Free Library. And he stays in touch with people on Facebook, and he came to the Little Free Library Festival to meet people face-to-face. And I love to hear stories like that, where a Little Free Library is really making a difference for an individual and helping them make connections.
That is a truly heartwarming story to hear. And I want to ask you a little bit about your book, the Little Free Library book. And I suspect that we've covered a lot that's in there, because I think you wrote down stories of people who have built Little Free Libraries. But can people also find out how to build a Little Free Library and connect to resources within the Little Free Library movement? What all's in your book, and what don't we know about that might be hidden in those pages?
Well, the Little Free Library book, it tells the story of how Little Free Library got started, and Todd's story of building the first one. It has profiles of about 50 different stewards around the world. I didn't get to travel to see all these Little Free Libraries, unfortunately, but thanks to Skype and email and phone calls, I felt really lucky to get to talk with all these folks. And then it also has practical guidelines of how to start a Little Free Library, how to build one, how to use it to connect with your neighbors, how to get people to come and take a book, creative things you can do to generate interest around the library, lots of good tips and tricks in the book as well. And it has about 400 color photos.
That's great. And where can people find the book if they're interested?
The book is available in all major bookstores, and you can also get it through the Little Free Library website, which is littlefreelibrary.org.
There are also a number of other resources that are available on your website. Would you tell the listeners a little bit about some of the other resources that might be available to them?
Well, on littlefreelibrary.org, you can find out just about everything you could possibly want to know about how to start a Little Free Library. One of my favorite features of the website is the world map. So when you build a Little Free Library, as I mentioned, you can really build it however you want, to to look like a castle or a log cabin or a cow. Or you can also buy a Little Free Library from the Little Free Library nonprofit organization, and they'll ship anywhere in the world. Now, the only thing that makes a Little Free Library official is that you have the Little Free Library charter sign that goes on the Little Free Library. And so if you build one yourself or if you order one from the organization, you register it on the website, and then they send you the official sign that you can put on the library. And after you do that, you can register on the world map, and that shows where Little Free Libraries are all over the world. And I love to use that when I'm traveling because I think that you mentioned it's kind of like people coming to a Little Free Library or like watching birds come to a bird feeder. Well, when I travel, I feel like instead of a bird watcher, I'm a Little Free Library watcher because I'm always looking for the local Little Free Library. So with the world map, I can check out where that might be.
Well, that's very inspiring. I'll have to confess that I'm sitting here half listening and half dreaming about what my Little Free Library is going to look like. So I'm very excited at everything that we've talked about. And one of the themes that really occurs to me along with it is the long arc of the history of libraries throughout the world that we haven't really spoken about that. But public libraries have gone through a rise and fall of evolution. We've had private libraries for the bulk of the written history of the human species. And then it's only in the latter couple centuries that the idea of a public library accessible to the general public has really emerged. And like we said with the funding cuts, one of the very important things to know is that a Little Free Library is not a substitute for your public library, but it is part of the ecosystem of literacy that supports access to knowledge. And I was wondering if you have any thoughts or insights on that theme of the arc of libraries and evolution of libraries.
It's interesting because the founders of the Little Free Library nonprofit, they actually, their dream and inspiration actually was Andrew Carnegie. And Andrew Carnegie started the public library system in the United States because he wanted book access to be free. And previously, you had to pay a subscription if you wanted to use the library. And so Andrew Carnegie built this beautiful system of public libraries across the United States. And I believe he built 2,509. So the goal of the Little Free Library founder was to build 2,510 Little Free Libraries because he loved this idea of books for all, book access for everybody. So that was really one of the inspirations was the public library system. And we've had great cooperation and success working with public libraries. Some of them even put a Little Free Library in their lobby for people to trade books, because if you're a book lover, you can never have too many books, and that's a book that someone can take and they can keep forever. So I love the idea of, as you've said, this just increasing the ecosystem of literacy and increasing the access to books. And there have been lots of studies that have shown for kids, having as few as 20 books in your home can help propel you academically. So that we can contribute to someone's success in school is just the icing on the cake.
Now, Margaret, we would love to be able to just spend the entire show extolling the virtues of Little Free Libraries, but as with all things these days, it seems that there is a subset of people out there that are determined to regulate every aspect of our lives. And there are some who are using what little power they may have in their respective communities to try to have Little Free Libraries taken down, saying that they're unsanctioned, illegal, detached structures and that people are going to be fined if they're not removing them. What has your experience been with these types of activities that have cropped up in areas where people are actually trying to undermine the incredible benefits that little free libraries are adding to communities?
Well, I'm glad you bring this up because I don't want people to be scared of this. In the nearly 40,000 little free libraries around the world, there have really only been a handful of cases where they've been outlawed. And when they have been outlawed, the community really rallies and says, "What are you talking about? We can't have a little free library. That's crazy." It's like going after a little girl's lemonade stand, really. So one case was in Leawood, Kansas. There was a 9-year-old boy who put up a little free library as a Mother's Day present for his mom. And he loved to read and he wanted to share his books, but it went against a city ordinance because it was a freestanding structure and he had to take it down. So when this happened, it went viral. And this boy got support from all over the country. He got a letter from a Holocaust survivor that told him about when she was his age, Nazis were burning books and she was in a concentration camp. He got a letter from Daniel Handler, who's the author of the Lemony Snicket series, with a book donation. He was interviewed on CNN and by Time Magazine. And the city, if you can believe it or not, they changed their mind pretty quickly and let this boy have his little free library back. So in all these cases that have cropped up, I haven't heard of a single case where the city or the town actually followed through. Luckily, the community support behind the individual with a little free library has won out every time.
Well, thank you for sharing all of these thoughts that you've offered us on Love and Revolution Radio today. I want to remind the listeners that we are speaking with Margaret Aldrich, who is the author of a great little book called The Little Free Library Book. She's also an editor and writer based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and as you can tell, very involved in this little free library movement. Thank you, Margaret, for joining us on the show. Is there any last words you want to share with the guests before we end?
Oh, just thank you so much for having me.
I need you to be love, 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 love and revolution. Love, love, love and revolution.
Thanks this week to our guest, Margaret Aldrich, and to my wonderful co-host, Sherry Mitchell. Our theme song is Love and Revolution, with words by Diane Patterson and performed by her and Spirit Radio. You can find more of her great music at www.dianepatterson.org.
And I'd like to thank my amazing co-host, Rivera Sun, for another engaging and important conversation. If you enjoyed this show, you might also enjoy the things that I post on my Facebook page, Sacred Instructions, which can be found on the Love and Revolution webpage and on the podcast. Love and Revolution Radio is a weekly radio program, and your local radio station can broadcast it. All you have to do is call them and ask them. You can reach us via the Love and Revolution page on Rivera Sun's website, www.riverasun.com. And we are Love and Revolution Radio on Podomatic, Stitcher, and iTunes.
For Love and Revolution Radio, I'm Rivera Sun. Margaret mentioned the Cop Kid Little Free Library programs that are occurring around the country. But you know, the subversive peace activist in me realizes that a little free library is a two-way street. So, listeners, maybe you'll find yourself sticking books on unarmed peacekeeping, conflict resolution, and nonviolent communication in a police precinct little free library box by the time we talk to you next week.
What if you knew that your actions could turn by the alcohol of everything? How would you play if your actions determined the alcohol?